From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Illinois has landed a $2 billion electric vehicle battery plant deal. Gotion's a Chinese battery maker. They've selected Mantino and Kankakee County for its second American facility. The contract comes at a steep cost, though. Illinois leaders have promised the company $536 million in incentives, along with local property tax concessions. Governor says the cost will be worth it.
2,600 new jobs, a $2 billion gigafactory, the most significant new manufacturing investment in Illinois in decades. It's just the most recent proof that we are in a new paradigm here. Illinois is on the rise, and we're open for business.
That's Governor J.B. Pritzker announcing a major EV battery plant is coming to Illinois. Today we'll look at Illinois' business climate. Is the state positioning itself to be a cleaner energy leader? And is that going to translate into more jobs? Also, Chicago's mayor facing several challenges. We'll talk about that and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime State House reporter and observer. Our guest this week, Greg Hines, columnist for Crane Chicago Business. And Greg, it's always good to have you back with us.
My pleasure as always, sir.
So, Greg, we talked about this on the show a little bit last week. State leaders have been touting this announcement. It's a plant to make EV batteries. It's going to locate near Kankakee. The company is known as Gotion. It's a Chinese company that's behind this project. How big of a deal is this for Illinois?
Oh, I think this is the real thing. This is probably the biggest single industrial development in this state. I mean, certainly in decades, maybe since Jim Thompson announced the Mitsubishi plant three or four decades ago. What I find particularly significant about it is that there's been, if you look at what's happened in the tech world in the last 30 or 40 years, there's been all kinds of potential things that have happened in this state. The cell phone was born here. A semiconductor was invented here, but yet the industries that developed and grew out of that didn't happen here for the most part. They didn't happen somewhere else. Well, now you have another really hot industry, electric vehicles. We'll see how big it grows. There's some resistance in some quarters, but it is certainly the hot thing now. And for a change, Illinois has a good foundational base there. We're adding plants, we're adding suppliers, we're adding facilities, and we're adding jobs. In this case, 2,600. You never know that these things are going to happen until they actually happen, but this one is on a fast timeline. They're supposed to be up and operating in Mokena, Montana, by next year sometime. It looks like Illinois has established itself in for a change in a growing industry, and that's only good news for this state.
And we know what we're hearing about these types of investments here in Illinois. We hear it from an Illinois angle. But Juliana Stratton was just on a trade trip to Japan. She talked about how this is being noticed around the world. Do you think there's truth to that, or is that maybe a little hyperbole?
I do think there's truth to it because the companies, many of them, are located overseas in foreign countries. In this case, Gotion, the company that's going to build here in Illinois, is a Chinese company. Illinois is, it's no secret that the Pritzker people, after a couple other battery plants, that would almost certainly come from foreign companies. I think, like I said, you never know until the thing is actually there and the jobs are there how good it's going to be. But for a change, we're in the middle of a new industry that shows a lot of promise and. You know, good for the Pritzker people. Now it costs us some money. There's some really big incentives here, hundreds of millions of dollars. But if you look at the amount we're having to pay as opposed to what other states are paying in Georgia, a new high-end plant, there's $2.1 billion in subsidies there. Compared to that, the amount that's being spent here is relative. Gee, that's, it's not nothing, but it looks like we got a reasonably good deal.
Charlie, a whole generation of people have grown up hearing that Illinois is bad for business, that we're a high-tech state and that companies don't want to locate here. They want to go elsewhere to places like Texas or, you know, maybe another Florida, places like that. Does this change that that whole mantra that's been out there? Or is, I mean, we still are a high-tech state, at least among a lot of different factors when you look at it.
Yeah, I would say a lot of that bad-mouthing is not accurate. It's hyperbole from the people who are the naysayers. And I think the prior governor, Bruce Rauner, was one of the largest ones. He's always bad-mouthing the state of Illinois. And as a matter of fact, we're doing pretty well. If I'm not mistaken, this is like the fifth company to make a deal with Illinois under the REV program, Reimagining Energy and Vehicles, that we adopted a couple of years ago. And what I think one of the key things about this is that this company is going to manufacture lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles. Those things are really heavy, and so the plant to make them wants to be close to where the vehicle builders. So this plant is going to be in Manteno in Kankakee County. That's not that far to the Mitsubishi. Well, it's not Mitsubishi anymore, but to the electric vehicle manufacturing company in Normal, or to the electric bus company in Joliet. So I think that is, what would you say, that is like the final building block in Illinois as being a major player in the role of electric vehicles. And it's interesting because the Illinois, according to a story that I saw from Capital News Illinois, more than 186,000 EVs and hybrid vehicles have been licensed in Illinois since 2018. And as of a month ago, there were about 80,000 fully electric cars on Illinois roads. So that's a good sign for the future, I think. And I think, Greg, didn't you have a story from CNBC a month or so ago about how Illinois rates as one of the top states for business?
I don't know if it's one of the top states, but our relative position has gotten a little bit better. We're still no better than in the middle, but there's nothing like success to bring success. There's a couple other plants here, I think, that are close to this facility that are worth mentioning that the state is going to have to paddle pretty hard now to sell. One is the Stellantis Jeep factory, the former Jeep factory, up in Belvedere. That is now closed, and reopening that facility for electric vehicle production is one of the items that the strike now in the auto industry is about. The United Auto Workers really want that. Pritzker really wants it. And then a little bit farther down the road is the status of Ford's huge Torrance Avenue facility in Chicago, the big assembly plant. That is absolutely critical for that part of the city. It provides lots of good-paying middle-class jobs in an area that doesn't have nearly enough. But that factory is now old. It's outmoded. It produces gasoline-powered vehicles. That needs to convert to electric vehicle production, or little by little, those jobs are going to go away. Having a battery factory nearby is going to be very helpful to that. But that one is worth watching because Ford has yet to declare what it wants to do. I hear lots of rumors about they're probably going to have to build a new facility. They could do it on the southeast side. They could do it in the suburbs, or they could leave the area entirely. I'd keep your eye on that one, too, down the road. That's really the ultimate end game here, saving that plant and repurposing it for the next few decades.
And Charlie, and I want both of you to weigh in on this, but for years I have heard, and this has mostly been from Democrats, a lot of complaining about tax breaks and incentives to businesses, basically that it wasn't going to pay off in the long run. And yet as Greg just mentioned, Charlie, that there is a lot of incentives and tax breaks in this plan to get this Goshen company to come here. And I'm assuming more of that's going to have to happen if they want some of these other facilities to locate in Illinois as well. So what's changed? I mean, is it because Democrats are in charge that they're not complaining as much? What's going on here?
Well, I think one of the things is that we've not been burned the way some other states have. Greg mentioned Georgia with the $2 billion plus. And then there was the plant up in Wisconsin. I forget the name of it.
Foxconn, you guys, I think. Yeah.
Right, that one that turned out to be a big fiasco. And one of the things that we've not mentioned yet, which I think is interesting, is part of this deal is that Goshen is going to create 2,600 full-time jobs, and those jobs are going to pay at least 120% of the average wage of jobs in Kankakee County. That would put the salaries at about, what, $55,000, which is pretty darn good for that area. And so I think that's going to be a real bust. And it's going to hire these folks, and that's going to add to the population base, which will help the local governments get more money from the state in terms of some of the revenue sharing we do that's based on population. And one thing that I thought was interesting, you know, there's all this talk about maybe the Bears are going to relocate to Arlington Heights, and the local school districts are very upset because they think they're going to get shafted. Well, under this deal, I'm pretty sure that the various school districts and other local governments in Kankakee have already agreed to cap the taxes that are going to be paid at $2 million a year for the next 30 years. And so that whole issue has been resolved.
Yeah, Sean, you're right. I fully ratify everything Charlie just said, but there has been kind of a C-level change here, in part because organized labor really wants this. They don't have the jobs inside the plant, but they have the jobs building the plant. One of the issues of the national strike that's going on now is whether battery plants ought to be unionized too. I'm sure that has some hopes there. That hasn't been said. It is kind of remarkable. I mean, we have this $400 million deal closing fund that Pritzker wanted, the legislature gave him without much debate at all. It's essentially a mad money fund. You know, Acme Widgets, if you want to set up a big plant here, well, we're here. We can give you $100 million to help you do it, or in this case, $125 million. You're right. Those are the kinds of things that Democrats might have reflexively opposed in previous years, but I think the lollipop at the end of the rainbow here, to mix metaphors, the 2,600 jobs Charlie was referring to, that's a big draw for labor and a big draw for Democrats. And they want to be able to, for a change, talk about what they created, not what maybe didn't come here.
And before we move on, Greg, just I thought maybe you could clarify this point for us, too. I've been reading and seeing a lot about this same company, Goshen. Of course, they have Chinese. They are a Chinese company. There's questions about how close of a ties they have to the Communist Party. They were looking to locate and do some work up in and have a plant, I believe, up in Michigan. That's been getting a lot of opposition. What's the whole deal with that? And why haven't we heard much about that here?
You haven't heard about it much here because there's a real desire to get those 2,600 jobs. But conservatives up in Michigan did make a big deal about it in the conservative list of enemies now. Red China is at the absolute top of the list. They hate it. They don't like it. You know, but the fact of the matter is Rich Miller pointed out at Capital Facts, the biggest shareholder in this company is Volkswagen, a good German company. Their headquarters is in California. This is, I believe, the fourth largest producer of batteries in the world for electric vehicles. You know, you can demand ideological purity, or you can live in the real world. The real world is you're going to have to deal with companies that maybe have a pedigree you don't like fully if you want to be a player.
Yeah, Charlie, you're going to have companies coming from different countries, even some that you don't like that much.
Yeah, and I think it makes good sense for Illinois to do this. And as Greg mentioned, the major stockholder is Volkswagen, and I don't see them as being part of any deal by the government in China to steal trade secrets or anything like that. So I think that that fear is somewhat exaggerated. And remember, in Michigan, the political climate is a lot different than it is here.
You know, there's also the fact that there's a good answer to the fears about, well, this is a communist country and a communist company, whatever. We're talking 2,600 jobs, jobs that are going to go to Illinoisans in Illinois, not somewhere in Beijing or Shanghai or whatever. That's a powerful answer to this, why are we dealing with communist countries?
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler and Greg Hines with Crane Chicago Business. Well, Greg, one thing we've been watching quite a bit here in the state of Illinois, other parts of the state of Illinois, is how the new mayor of Chicago is doing, Brandon Johnson. And he seems to have a lot on his plate. He's only been in office a few months, but it seems like a critical juncture for him with everything that's going on. You're certainly closer to that, watching it a lot more closely. Your take on Mayor Johnson and what's ahead of him?
My take is that this is most definitely a work in progress. There have been a few good things happen. There have also been some very bumpy things happen. Showing elements of both is the new budget forecast his administration released that shows that we have a big hole, hundreds of million dollars again, not the relatively small figure that Lori Lightfoot left behind. Part of that is because we're having to spend a couple hundred million dollars estimated to deal with refugees. There's not much Johnson can do about that. On the other hand, he's made a political calculus that he's going to stick with his campaign promise and not raise the property tax at all, even with inflation. That reverses the policy that Lori Lightfoot had put into place. I don't think the ratings agencies, which upgraded Chicago last year, are going to like that. We'll see how much they dislike it. But that's going to cost us another, if memory serves, another $85 million a year, because we're not going to do that under his proposed plan. In addition, there's another $45 million in costs here that hasn't received much attention. One of the things that Lightfoot did is reverse a traditional policy in which the city no longer would pay a portion of pension costs for non-teaching personnel in Chicago public schools. She argued that we need the money for City Hall, for city government, so you're going to have to pay that yourself. Well, lo and behold, Brandon Johnson reversed that. And if you remember, what did Johnson do before he was married? He was the organizer for the CTU. Stacey Gates, president of the Chicago Teachers Union, is all over the place at City Hall, and she applauded this decision. But the fact of the matter is that this budget, apparently, when it comes out next month, is going to burden city taxpayers with an extra $45 million so we can spend more money over at Chicago Public Schools that will free up money to go to CTU members. I'm not sure that's very smart politics, but I guess this mayor concluded that he says it's fair and the right and honorable thing to do, but it sure looks like a little bit of political back-scratching to me.
And one issue that he did not create, but he's certainly having to deal with, is the influx of migrants coming into the city. And I've been reading some of the plans for that to try to house some of these individuals and families that maybe they're talking about almost big tents that they're going to put up, tent cities of some sort. What's happening with that?
The fact of the matter is that the city, even though this problem has been developing for a full year now, simply hasn't developed the infrastructure to deal with all these folks. That's partially their fault. It's partially the fact that the federal government won't let them work. But if you go to the neighborhood police stations, like the one in my neighborhood, you see all these families camped out in the lobby. I mean, these little kids there, throwing around kicking around a soccer ball inside the police station. That's horrible, and I can't imagine what's going to happen when we get to the winter. Well, the city has decided that we need to do something to get them out of the police station, so they're going to set up these big campuses, tent cities, maybe inside, maybe outside, we don't know, to try to temporarily house them. But it didn't start out as a crisis, but it's developing into a crisis. This is a big city. It should have been able to handle the almost 14,000 refugees who showed up here and accommodate them and get them into real housing. It's a lot of finger pointing going on. The state could do more. The feds could do more. But It's not a pretty picture. I'll give the mayor credit for trying, but I'd urge him to try a little harder.
Charlie, you and Greg both have seen a lot of mayors come and go in the city of Chicago, and I would argue that he may be facing, Brandon Johnson may be facing as many challenges as any mayor coming in, starting a first term, as anyone I can recall. Would you agree with that, and how do you think things are going there?
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. I'd have to stop and think back about all the difficulties some of the other people faced, how they resolved them. I started working at the Sun-Times when the mayor was Richard J. Daley, Richard I, and there were problems, but they were resolved pretty much because they had a city council who was at his beck and call and would do whatever he wanted. And Johnson does not have that yet. And he has a totally different style. It's not all top down. And he said several times, people have been critical that he's not moving fast enough on this stuff. And he says, well, I consult with people. I don't issue edicts the way Mayor Lightfoot did. I talk to people and we try and find some common ground. One of the things, and Greg mentioned this, that I think would be really helpful would be if the federal government would get off its duff and allow these immigrants to work. Because it's not that the folks, the stories you read out of Chicago or that you hear in the broadcast media, where reporters go and talk to these folks who are here, a lot of them from Venezuela. It's not that, hey, I want a free handout. It's people who complain about, I want to work. I feel bad just sitting here, not being able to work to support my family. And in my mind, if you were to authorize these folks to work, many of them are very talented professionals, and put them to work, you would give them the ability to be able to find housing, pay for it themselves, to be able to support their families, and oh, by the way, pay income taxes, sales taxes, and contribute to the revenue stream for the city and the state.
Do you know what's going on there, Greg? Any news on that?
I don't know for a fact, but what I'm told by people in Washington who I think know what's going on is that the Biden administration is a little reluctant to open itself up to attack. That you're bringing in all these other people and Americans that don't have jobs. The question of border security has really stuck with it's a point of criticism with this administration from the beginning. They haven't solved it. There's a perception here that you're gonna let these people work, so more are gonna show up. I don't think that's an issue the Biden people want to deal with. By the time the Democrats are here next year for their convention, 11 months from now, there's still tent cities of immigrants and people aren't allowed to work. I think it may really hit the fan.
Well, just a couple of minutes left here. Charlie, I'll go to you first on this. There's been a lot of discussion about, speaking of the presidential election coming up, that some people, they want to keep Donald Trump off the ballot because of his ties to the insurrection. It's a legal theory. It's being tested in several states. The 14th Amendment in the U.S. Constitution says a person is ineligible to become president if they had previously sworn under oath to protect the Constitution, but later engaged in insurrection or rebellion against state or federal governments. Now, I know we haven't seen this before necessarily played out, but what are your thoughts on this effort here, Charlie?
Well, I think it's really a long shot, and I think it's a stretch. And I don't think it'll go anywhere. I think there's a case going on in Colorado. There's another one in Minnesota. And there have been inquiries here in Illinois. And David McKinney did a story for WBEZ. And it's interesting because Governor Pritzker's spokespeople said, we're waiting to see how this is going to play out. And representatives for the Democratic Party of Illinois and the Illinois Republican Party also declined to comment. And the State Board of Elections, who I guess would be the person or the people you would say would weigh whether somebody's qualified or not and toss a candidate off the ballot, their comment was basically, hey, this is up to the Trump. Or I'm sorry, their comment was basically, hey, this is going to be up to the courts. This is a constitutional dispute. I'm quoting here from Matt Dietrich, who's a spokesman for the state board. And there is a decision from the Illinois State Supreme Court that said electoral boards in Illinois, including the Illinois State Board of Elections, don't have jurisdiction to decide constitutional issues. So they're kind of punting to the Illinois Supreme Court as well. So I'm thinking that this is not really going to go anywhere, but it's an interesting take.
Greg, do you agree with Charlie? This is wishful thinking, maybe by the Democrats and maybe even a few Republicans?
Yeah, I do. I'll put it succinctly, until and if Donald Trump is convicted of something, not just charged, but convicted of something that involves election interference or obstruction or a conspiracy to overturn the election, this is all chatter. At this point, he hasn't been found to be a conspirator. He hasn't been found to have engaged in an insurrection. So until that happens, he has every right to run.
And also coming up next week, and we'll talk more about this on future shows as well, is the elimination of cash bail. Certainly been watching that for months and going through the court system, and it's finally going to take effect, that change, making Illinois first in the nation among states. That will happen starting on Monday. It's time now for our notes from the field, and Charlie, we'll go to you first.
Well, the Illinois State Fair reported the attendance set a 9-year record. Something more than 700,000, I think they said roughly 708,000 people attended the fair, which was up 11% from a year ago. And they said the increase was due to a number of factors, including good weather, which is always a key, the renovation of the fairground facilities, and the fact that there were discounted admission for one of the fair days going down from $10 to $2. And they also noted that in prior years, there had been estimates of fair attendance, guesstimates, I would say, 1 million or more. But in reality, there is a new national standard for calculating the attendance at state fairs across the country. And according to this calculation method, which was adopted in 2015, that's how we've reached the new record attendance since then.
And Greg?
I'm going to go back to the city budget, Sean. Former Mayor Rahm Emanuel famously said that a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. Well, this big $500 million budget hole that Brandon Johnson rolled out this week could be a crisis. And what's going to be interesting to watch is whether he uses this as a club to tell his own people who he promised all kinds of increased spending on social services and whatever, that, gee, guys, you're going to have to wait another 2 or 3 years. They've been hearing they're going to do that. Or whether he uses this as ammunition to indeed push some of the very controversial tax hikes on business that he talked about during the campaign and has been very quiet about since. Maybe he'll do both, but it's going to be a real test of what he's about.
Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. And our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Greg Hines with Crane Chicago Business. And I want to mention just for a moment here, too, Greg, after 50 years, pulling back on some of his daily duties. But, Greg, we're going to still be hearing from you and reading your columns as well going forward. That's correct?
You are. I'm going to do a monthly column to keep my hand in. And I suspect I'm also going to be doing some special projects or some things I'm interested in following that I'm going to continue to follow.
Well, I'm glad to hear it, and kudos on a tremendous career. I know Charlie feels the same.
Indeed.
Appreciate
indeed.
It.
Well, you can find our show where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. Just look for State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, and join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.